Hey everyone, this is John and this is the Nintendo Show, the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet. This is the mini show for the month of February 2015, which means we are just going to talk about a random assortment of games that we've been playing. And by we, I mean me. Both Ryan and Wes had to bail out on this episode. So I just decided to go ahead and do one solo, more of a low-key episode, because we've been pretty chaotic the past few ones. So we'll take it down a notch with just some games that I've been putting a lot of time into recently. I'm going to talk about Metroid Prime, Gunman Clive 2, Citizens of Earth, and Fire Emblem Awakening. But to start the show, I'm going to start, as we usually do with the mini show, with the Club Nintendo Rewards. And this may be one of the last times that we start a mini show with the Club Nintendo Rewards, because Club Nintendo is, of course, going away, which I'm sure everyone has heard by now. So I want to start with the physical rewards. The one that I picked up when I was finally able to get onto Club Nintendo and successfully order some of this physical stuff. I got the Majora's Mask Messenger bag for 800 coins, which is a really cool looking little tote bag that, you know, it was one of the first physical rewards that I had picked up in a while. It's how much I liked it. But there's some other really cool stuff. This other stuff I pass on, just decided to get games with my remaining coins. But there's a Fierce Deity Link puzzle, a 300-piece jigsaw puzzle for 800 coins, a Zelda 3DS XL pouch for 600 coins, a cool little Mario retro t-shirt for 700 coins. There's a new poster set for Smash Bros. Characters, Duck Hunt Dog, Bowser Jr., and Shulk for 700 coins, and then some Animal Crossing mini playing cards for 600 coins. So this is actually some cool stuff, some of the cooler stuff in a while that they've had available for physical rewards. But the huge highlight of the Club Nintendo update for kind of the passing of Club Nintendo here is the absolute ton of games that they made available for download for coins. And originally, the way we had this planned out is Wes was going to read off the list of games that are available to download, and I would just quickly rapid fire say buy or pass on all of them. And I wanted to have Wes read off the list because he's easily flustered, and the huge list of games would definitely kind of throw him for a loop. So the really cool thing about the list of games is that they have like full actual retail games available for download for really small amounts of coins, and that is a really great thing for people who maybe haven't bought those games. It's really cool that you can get them for essentially free like this. So I'm not going to make too many comments about the actual games that are available themselves. I'm sure that you've heard them all before, but I do want to go through the list and give a really brief recommendation for how I would personally spend coins if I had any left to get more of these. So I actually, really briefly before I read off the list, I got to the Messenger bag. I also downloaded a couple of 3DS eShop games that I had missed out when they came out, so I picked up Dylan's Rolling Western, Lost Ranger, and also Sakura Samurai. So two games that I had not gotten on the eShop, and I still have a couple hundred coins left. So I might get another game, depending on what's striking me at the moment. I do need to upgrade my SD card in my 3DS. Now I've filled up my 8 gigabytes. I need to upgrade to a 16 so that I can actually have room for more of these things. But anyway, I digress. So the following games are available to download on the Wii U for the following NES games are available to download on the Wii U for 200 coins each. Punch Out, buy, Ice Climber, pass, Volleyball, pass, Tennis, pass, Pinball, pass, NES Open Tournament, golf, pass, Ice Hockey, buy, Golf, pass, Clue Clue Land, pass, Baseball, pass, Wario's Woods, pass, Urban Champion, pass, Dr. Mario, buy, Donkey Kong 3, buy, Super Mario Bros. Lost Levels, buy, Mario Bros. 3, buy, Super Mario Bros. 2, buy, Super Mario Bros., buy, Yoshi, pass. Balloon Fight, pass. Kid Icarus, buy. Zelda 2 Adventure of Link, pass. Metroid, buy. Wrecking Crew, pass. Mario Brothers, pass. Excitebike, buy. Donkey Kong Jr., pass. And the following Super Nintendo games are available to download on the Wii U, also for 200 coins. Super Metroid, buy. Super Mario World, buy. Super Punch-Out, buy. F-Zero, pass. Pilot Wings, pass. Earthbound, which is actually available for 250 coins, definitely buy. The following GBA games are available to download on the Wii U, also for 200 coins. F-Zero Maximum Velocity, pass. Golden Sun, buy. Yoshi's Island, buy. So let's move over to the Wii U eShop games that are available to download on the Wii U. Dr. Luigi, buy. NES Remix, pass. If it were NES Remix 2, I'd definitely say buy. The Wonderful 101, 600 coins, definitely buy. Wii Fit U, 600 coins, pass. Game & Wario, 600 coins, pass. Wii Party U, 850 coins, pass, if only because it's so many coins. And the following NES games are available to download on the Wii for 200 coins. Clue Clue Land, pass. Super Mario Bros. 2 Lost Levels, pass. Zoda's Revenge, Star Tropics 2, buy. NES Play Action Football, pass. It's kind of strange that they have a couple of repeats on that list, but Nintendo does do strange things from time to time. And the Super Nintendo games available on the Wii are also very strange because two of them are available on the Wii U for less coins. So for 250 coins on the Wii, you can get Super Punch-Out and also Pilot Wings, which you can get on the Wii U for less coins. So definitely pass on those for the Wii. But then you can also get Super Mario Kart and A Link to the Past. I would say pass on Super Mario Kart. A Link to the Past is a tough one because it's such a good game, but it's also available on the Wii U Virtual Console. I'm going to say buy A Link to the Past for the coins and then just pay the extra dollar to move it over to the Wii U if you don't already have a quick accessible copy of A Link to the Past. So the following games from the N64 are available to download for 250 coins each on the Wii. Super Mario 64, buy. Super Metroid, buy. Star Fox 64, buy. F-Zero X, buy. Paper Mario, buy. Mario Kart 64, buy. 1080 Snowboarding, buy. Super Smash Bros., buy. Mario Tennis, pass. Mario Party 2, pass. Majora's Mask, buy. And it is really cool that Nintendo is actually acknowledging that the Nintendo 64 existed. The weird thing is that Ocarina of Time didn't show up on the list, which is a bit strange. And also, I was kind of expecting, like, as soon as like I saw the big list of Nintendo 64 games that were available, I thought that maybe they'd also throw Sin and Punishment onto the list, which was a virtual console game on the Wii. But neither of those showed up, which is very strange. But the following WiiWare games are available to download on the Wii for 250 coins each. Fluidity, buy. Excitebike World Rally, buy. Snowpack Park, pass. Echo Shooter Plant 350, pass. Through Space, pass. Art Style Cubello, buy. Doc Lewis's Punch-Out, buy. And that's a cool one because it's never been available outside of Club Nintendo before, and it probably never will be. But let's move over to the 3DS. The following Game Boy games are available to download on the 3DS for 150 coins each. Super Mario Land, pass. Super Mario Land 2, buy. Baseball, pass. Kid Icarus of Myths and Monsters, buy. Metroid 2, buy. Tennis, pass. Golf, pass. Donkey Kong, buy. Mario's Picross, pass. Radar Mission, pass. And the following Game Boy Color games are available to download on the 3DS for 200 coins. Wario Land 2, buy. Link's Awakening DX, buy for sure. Mario Golf, pass. And the following NES games are available to download on your 3DS for 200 coins each. 3D Classics ZVS, pass. 3D Classics Kid Icarus, buy. 3D Classics Excitebike, buy. 3D Classics Urban Champion, pass. 3D Classics Twinbee, pass. Punch-Out, buy. Donkey Kong 3, pass. Metroid, buy. Legend of Zelda, buy. And finally, to close it out here, the following eShop games are available to download on the 3DS. Curse Sploosh, 150 coins, pass. Quetzal's Corridors, 200 coins, pass. Sparkle Snapshots 3D, 200 coins, pass. Looksy's Lookup, 200 coins, pass. Brain Age Express, Arts and Letters, 200 coins, pass. Brain Age Express, Math, 200 coins, pass. Brain Age Express, Sudoku, 200 coins, pass. Sakura Samurai, Art of the Sword, 200 coins. I just started it, and I don't know, it seems okay so far, so I'm going to hesitantly say buy. A Kappa's Trail, 200 coins, pass. Tokyo Crash Mobs, 200 coins, buy. Mario and Donkey Kong Minis on the Move, 250 coins, buy. Chibi-Robo Photo Finder, 250 coins, buy. Harmonite, 300 coins, buy. Dylan's Rolling Western, 250, buy. Dylan's Rolling Western Last Ranger, 300, buy. Fluidity Spin Cycle, 300, buy. Crosswords Plus, 600, pass. Brain Age Concentration Training, 600, pass. Mario 3D Land, 600, buy. New Super Mario Bros. 2, 600, buy. Donkey Kong Country Returns, 3D, 600, buy. Star Fox 64, 3D, 700, buy. Paper Mario Sticker Star, 700. It's not great. I'm going to say buy only if you have everything else that you want. In Kid Icarus Uprising, 700 coins. I'm going to have to say pass. I did not like that game. But anyway, those are just my recommendations. There is just a ton of stuff available, and I'm actually kind of curious of how many coins it would take to actually have everything. There's a couple of repeats. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. And as far as Club Nintendo is concerned, it was a pretty cool service. I actually liked the digital games a lot more than most of the physical rewards. I did get a few physical rewards throughout the life cycle of Club Nintendo, but I'm actually really looking forward to what they come up with next for a rewards program. So we'll see. I think the general consensus is it's going to be something close to their Digital Deluxe promotion, but we'll just have to wait and find out. To kick off the actual show, I want to talk a little bit about Metroid Prime, which I downloaded on the Wii U kind of virtual console eShop digital release of this game. I started it and I finished it. So I think the thing that stands out most about this game is just how well they adapted the Super Metroid formula to 3D. And the biggest key there, or one of the big keys there, is the really brilliant atmosphere and tone. The game is tense. It feels very dangerous moving throughout the world. It starts off with this tutorial section that shows you how to use everything. And one of the ways that they establish the tense and dangerous tone is then it takes away everything, which is typical of a Metroid game to start you out with just about nothing, and then they drop you onto this planet all by yourself. But then it turns out that you're not all by yourself. There's space pirates, there's a ruined Chozo civilization. Shit's gone down on this planet. And there are little story tidbits that you pick up here and there through your scan visor that will give you ideas of what all has happened. And I think like having to piece together what exactly is going on the planet also helps augment that really tense tone and atmosphere of the game. You do regain powers really quickly in Metroid Prime. within the first couple of hours, you have regathered everything that you used to have during the tutorial section. But the enemies also improve with you. Not only will enemies get harder as you progress in the game, but different enemies will start to populate areas you've already been to. So, when you're moving around in the game, you're collecting these power-ups, and you definitely feel more powerful, but you don't feel invincible because the enemies are always getting better with you. And especially if you're not gathering all of, like, the energy tanks and missile upgrades, if you're not getting every single power-up that's lying around, then you definitely... There's definitely that lacking feeling. Like, if you're getting toward the end of the game and you only have a few energy tanks, there's definitely the drive to want to go get more of them before you go for the final boss encounters. And speaking of missile upgrades, there are just a ton of them. And I actually used missiles a lot more than I remember using missiles in the past run-throughs of this game. I actually used them pretty liberally. And the thing about, like, all of the missile upgrades, I think you can have, like, as many as 250 missiles. And I finished the game with about 165, which, by some quick math, leaves about, like, 47 more pickups that are possible. No, that's off, like, 27, something like that. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. But what they do is, at the end of the game, once you beat the Omega Pirate and you have all of your upgrades, it then prompts you to go to the overworld again, to, like, the impact crater site. And if you haven't been there before, then it'll tell you, okay, there's artifacts scattered throughout the entire Talon planet, and it gives you clues about where they are. It actually, you know, pretty explicitly tells you what rooms that they're in, and then basically has you traverse the entire planet again. And while this seems like a fetch quest at kind of the surface level, it's actually a really smart design choice, because it then forces you to go through the entire world again with all of your upgrades, and gives you that extra opportunity to collect extra power-ups, to look at everything again, to explore all the nooks and crannies, to really see how packed this game is, and how deep every little room is. And scour the planet for all of these extra little things that will give you a pretty significant advantage if you get a lot of them when you're going into the final boss fights. And the world itself isn't as big as I remember it being, but it's really well connected. It's a lot more fluid than I remember it being. There are a bunch of places where it takes you from one section to the next, the Magma Caverns, Fendrana Drifts, and all that. And It connects in ways that you wouldn't think it would, but then it makes sense that it does. So it makes it very easy. I'm thinking specifically at the very end of the Chozo Ruins. There's a couple of ways that'll take you to the Talon Overworld, and then also to the Fendrana Drifts, give you different access there. But it gives you really easy ways to get to whatever section you want to get to. And there's always ways to skip over places that you don't want to revisit. For me, one of the places that I don't like retraversing is the sunken space pirate ship in the Talon Overworld. That section just doesn't do it for me. But anyway, it's got tons of content, tons of story and lore and optional things that you can scan. I mean, most of the scanning is actually optional, but there's, like, the proper regular story elements to scan, but then little side things that'll give you just little tidbits of information. They spent a lot of time and effort doing some world building, and it really pays off if you're going deep into the planet and the goings on that planet. So the Wii controls aren't ideal for all of the different guns and visors that you can have in Metroid Prime. They work great for aiming. and they work great for the platforming. But as far as switching between things, you can get used to pressing the plus or minus button and then flicking the controller where you need to be. But in the heat of a battle, it can be hectic, especially if you accidentally press the wrong button and switch to a visor rather than to an appropriate gun that you need. Or if someone becomes invisible and you actually switch to a gun rather than the appropriate visor that you need to see them. So the game was definitely built for that GameCube controller with the D-pad and the C-stick that just use the directions to switch between your different weapons and visors. But, you know, it works fine, but it's not the most optimal way to control the game. But other than that one little minor complaint about the altered controls, Retro Studios absolutely nailed it with the atmosphere and the tone and the exploration and all of the upgrades. This was, and the platforming, how good it feels to jump from platform to platform in different platforming sections. And God, the platforming, they just really nailed that as well. Just not only between like the helmet tilting slightly down so you can get a better idea of where you're headed, but just like the impact when you actually land a successful jump. You can feel in the way that the screen moves and adjusts and the sound effects. It just feels really good to land all of the jumps successfully. Metroid Prime is a modern masterpiece and definitely a game that you cannot miss. So whether you download it on the Wii U, it's now a $20 download and you do get Metroid Prime 2 and 3 along with it, or you track down a GameCube disc or the Wii Metroid Prime Trilogy discs, this is a game that absolutely must be played. So let's move over to Gunman Clive 2, which is available on the 3DS eShop, and this is a game that I also finished. And for anyone uninitiated, it is a 2D side-scrolling action platformer. It's the sequel to the hit 3DS eShop game, which came out back in 2013. And it's got that sketchbook visual style. It's Western-themed. And the game doesn't really change or alter or adjust anything that the main character, Clive, can do. It's really basic run, jump, and shoot mechanics. What the designer altered is the way that the levels are laid out and the design of the levels and what actually happens as you're traversing the world. So there's some auto-scrolling sections. There are sections where temporary platforms will appear and disappear. There are sections where there's like some gravity reversal going on. There's minecart sections. There's a section where you ride on a panda. They do a pretty good job, or I should say he, because I think it was developed by one guy. He does a pretty good job of keeping things fresh in terms of the level design, not repeating too many elements over and over again. They kind of hit one note, hits it pretty well, and then moves on to something else rather than banging it over and over again. So even though it doesn't repeat too many of like the twist mechanics, or it doesn't like repeat the same gimmicks from level to level over and over again, the basics never really evolve between jump and shoot, and that is kind of where the game gets a little bit stale. So there's a couple of like gun upgrades that are exactly the same as they were in the first game. There's like a spread gun as well as a more powerful, slower traveling bullet with shorter range. And you can, they're rare drops. You don't see them very often. And then once you get hit once, they're gone. So you're just back to your normal gun. Most of the time, you'll probably be going through the game just with your normal gun. And they don't really do anything to further mix up the way you manipulate Clive throughout the world. And it's not a huge problem. I think mostly because the game is short. I think my first run through, I beat it in an hour and a half. All of the levels take like 60 to 70 seconds to get through start to finish. There are a couple of frustrating sections where you'll have a lot of deaths and it'll start you back from the beginning of the level. Starting back from the beginning of the level isn't a huge deal because the levels are so short, but dying at the same places over and over again, it gets a little bit frustrating. And there's one or two sections throughout the game where I had a lot of deaths and I was starting to feel like I was doing things right, but maybe it wasn't intuitively designed to where the game was responding in the way it should have been responding. But the major problem that I had with the game was that what Clive is doing at the beginning is exactly the same as what he is doing at the end. He just has different sort of hills to climb. And I would have liked to see the actual mechanics of manipulating Clive evolve beyond just the jump and shoot, and maybe add a couple of things in there or change a couple of things around the way that that he moves throughout the world in order to give some fresh gameplay experiences in addition to the fresh levels. It kind of feels like a level pack. And I'm not saying that the game isn't worth playing. I think it's absolutely worth picking up. It's only like $4. And it has some really creative boss fights. It has some really creative level design. But the gameplay is really basic Mega Man or Contra. It doesn't really get much more or even as complicated as like NES, Mega Man, or Contra games. But I want to go back to the boss fights really quick for just a second. The boss fights do get pretty creative. It's basic pattern recognition. Once if you fight them and die, after you've like played them 2-3 times, you should have them pretty down packed to know exactly what they're going to do, and like they're the little tells and giveaways, and know exactly what you need to do to beat them. They can be marathons though. They do have lots of HP, so you do have enough health to mess up a few times, but if you're messing up over and over again, you're probably going to die just because the boss takes so much effort to finish off. One real big highlight of the game was the final boss fight, and I won't give away what it was, but the final boss fight I actually think made really creative use of Clyde's basic like jump and shoot skills. And if that were like the first boss fight and they continue to expand on what Clive can do and incorporate the new and different skills into further boss fights, that would have been really, really cool. But as it is, as a final boss fight, it was still really cool and really satisfying to figure out what you need to do in order to finish him off. There are multiple characters you can play through the game, and that kind of changes up some of the gameplay. So you have Clive. Mrs. Johnson is back from the first game. She jumps and floats in the air, kind of like Peach, but that doesn't really come into play with much of the platforming throughout the game. There's also a guy, Chieftain Bob, who is a American Indian character who doesn't have a gun. He has a spear, and he has melee attacks only. I played with him as a little bit, and it seems like they reduce the amounts of enemies that appear when you're playing as him, so he doesn't have as many obstacles, but you definitely have to take more consideration to when you're going after an enemy with him, because he has to get up close and personal to take them out. And then, of course, a minor spoiler here, when you beat the final boss, you unlock a fourth character, the Duck, who is back from the first game. And Duck mode is the mode where you can't attack at all. You have to get through levels entirely based on the way you're moving throughout the levels. And I can't remember from the first game, but I don't think you actually fight bosses when you're playing as the Duck. But I can't remember. Anyway, but then, you know, it's cool that it's back in there. It's a really funny little mode, and Gunman Clive 2 is now number one in the running for the coveted Nintendo Best Duck Award. So we'll see if it holds on to that when we do our awards show at the end of the year. So, like I said, $4 on the eShop. It's definitely worth trying out because it's a quick little game, and it's satisfying to play through and really satisfying when you figure out some of the trickier level designs. And you know, for $4 for an hour and a half of your time, it's definitely worth sitting down and playing through, and it's really satisfying to actually finish games. And this one is an easy one to finish. Let's jump over to Citizens of Earth, which is an RPG set in the modern world from Atlus. This one's on the Wii U eShop. I'm about 5 or 6 hours into it. And in this one, you play as the Vice President of Earth. You go around and you recruit citizens to fight for you. And these citizens basically become your playable character party members in battle. So you're actually the character on your world screen is the Vice President. And the three characters following you are your party members. They're the actual ones who actually do the battling. So there's lots of characters to recruit, I believe 40, and they have sort of everyday classes, bakers, baristas, mailmen, homeless people, mascots, school mascots, weather ladies, teachers, things like that. So there are a lot that you meet, but not a lot that you can recruit right away. So you can encounter them, and then they'll tell you, sure, I'll join your party, but first you have to do this, and maybe it'll give you a couple of tasks that you have to complete. Most of them that I've encountered, though, have just basically been, sure, I'll join your party, but only until you get later into the game. So I'll join you when you meet me at this spot, and I don't know where that spot is, so I assume it's a point later in the game that you have to get to. So all of these different characters have their own skills to use in battle. The way they attack, they're like stat buffs and debuffs versus the enemies, or increasing your own party member stats, healing, different sorts of elemental attacks. They all have their own talents as well, which is a skill that they use outside of battle. The baker bakes, it makes baked goods for you. You use those to restore your HP. The barista brews coffee. You use those to restore your skill points, basically your MP, outside of battle. They all also have like stat growth bonuses when they're in your party and they level up. So the mailman is like the vice president's brother. He is like the first guy who ever joins your party. And when he is in your party and your party members level up, they gain an additional +1 to their attack stat because he's in the party. And a lot of them have their own like attack attributes as well. So I mentioned elemental attacks before. Your basic ones: fire, water, electricity. But there's also physical attributes, verbal attributes, bio attributes. There's a lot of different elemental alignments going on. Some enemies are weak or resistant against certain ones. So there's a lot going on right from the beginning of the game, and the game itself is a bit bloated and unfocused. So First of all, the battles aren't random, but there are tons of them. There are sections of the game when you get to them where you will be having these encounters every few seconds when you're moving throughout the world. And they're very hard to avoid, because what will happen is you can move the world and you can run away from enemies. But if they are able to catch up to you and run into one of your characters to initiate the battle, it will go as a surprise attack, or your enemy has the advantage in the encounter, which basically means all of your characters will lose one skill point at the start of the battle. Those skill points are, of course, required to perform certain actions in battle, more powerful attacks, things like that. And most characters have a cap of either 3, maybe 4, and I think the highest I've seen is 5. So losing one really does affect the battle in a big way. And just having to fight the same battles over and over again can really be a slog. And you couple that with a bad map system that makes it hard to discern where your next objective point is, and that along with these really long load screens between sections, the game wasn't entirely well designed in terms of making things move quickly at the beginning and then expanding on that later. They hit you with a lot right away, and it's very hard to understand where you're supposed to be next and the best way to get there. Because sometimes I'll start trying to move throughout the world and figure out, okay, well, I've encountered this person, and this person says they'll join my party if they go here. Is it worth my time to go and try to have them join the party, or am I going to get myself into an area where the enemies are way too powerful and there's way too many of them? And that, the sort of like the amount of side quests, like recruiting characters that pop up, just makes it really difficult to decide whether or not you should be going for the main objective or whether these side quests are actually possible. And it just makes for a really unfocused experience. And then the game doesn't really build its momentum very well because you have so much going on right up front. I mentioned the poor map before. It makes it very hard to figure out what you're supposed to do next. You do have like these little objectives, and you have what is called your agenda. It's basically your quest log. It'll have like your main quests, and then it'll have your secondary stuff, and then it'll have all of your recruitment quests. Sometimes a main quest will require you complete a secondary quest, and vice versa. It's not easy to know what the game wants you to accomplish next. And then on the times when it is clear what you're supposed to accomplish next, sometimes it's difficult to find that because of the way the map is laid out. Basically, the map, you press the R shoulder button to bring up the map, and it'll tell you things like where your primary objectives are, where your secondary objectives are, where places where you can recruit people are, where you can have conversations on the map screen. The map delivers a lot of information except for very clearly spelling out where you are in relationship to other things. I do want to say something nice about the game, so I'll say that it looks pretty nice. It's got a real quirky personality to it in the visual style, and then also in the sense of humor. The game doesn't take itself too seriously, and I think that's where most of the comparisons to Earthbound come in, is the visuals and the tone. Other comparisons to Earthbound, I mentioned before, the battles are not random. You just kind of run into them on the open map as you go throughout the game. It is possible to win battles without actually entering the battle screen once you've leveled up and built up enough stats to be so overpowering versus enemies. You can just kind of send your troops at an enemy and take them out without entering the battle screen. You, of course, gain experience from that as well. Actually, that is a mechanic worth touching on when you're moving throughout the open map. you are able to have your party members charge forward, and that can either take out an enemy if you're overleveled, or it can initiate a battle, and if you kind of surprise attack them, then you'll gain more skill points toward the battle at the start of it. So, I mean, other than those things, I mean, there's a cap on the amount of items you can take. That's kind of like Earthbound. There's not much resource management, and in Earthbound, there was a lot of resource management with your MP, and this one, because you have your skill points, you don't have to worry about that too much. The game is buggy. There have been a lot of reports that there have been game-breaking crashes and bugs throughout the game. I haven't experienced any of those, but the frame rate does chug a lot throughout the game. So it's buggy, it's not optimized for Wii U, it's not a very pleasant experience. I might give this game a little bit more time to see if I can turn around on it, to see if the game does something that that impresses me. But so far, I mean, it's $15 on the eShop, I'm gonna have to say pass on it. So I'm gonna take one more break before moving on into Fire Emblem Awakening. I'm going to close out the show with Fire Emblem Awakening, like I just said. It's of course on the 3DS, and I just completed another run through. This one took me about 15, 16 hours because I shut off all the animations and I skipped all the dialogue. I didn't do too many of the side missions either. I just kind of flew through the game, all the main story, and I recruited some of the children characters, but flew through the game, start to finish. And this one, like Metroid Prime, is just another masterpiece of modern gaming. It's gonna feel, if you haven't played it, it's gonna feel real familiar to Fire Emblem veterans. Just the units, the way you progress, the way units are introduced to you, the way that the game is structured is gonna feel very similar to other Fire Emblem games. Just really pitch-perfect strategy RPG elements from the rock, paper, scissors, vulnerabilities and strengths, with like the sword, axe, and lance units, and then the additional unit types, ones with bows, ones that use magic, healing units, flying units of different types. All of these characters and class types have different strengths and weaknesses against each other, and end up really, really balanced to where it's nearly impossible, if not absolutely impossible, to get through the game focusing on one unit type or group of unit types. You really have to have a balanced army to be successful in the game. Along with the unit types and training units and achieving balance, is you also have to take your training into account. There's random but not really super random stat growth. Certain characters are inclined to grow in certain ways. In Fire Emblem Awakening, there's also your second seals, which allows you to either switch classes, but then also start over at a lower level and continue to improve characters if their stats are turning out absolutely awful, which actually happened with my main character, my Grandmaster character, who I, of course, named John. He was struggling with his speed. And I got to the point where all his other stats were looking great. His speed wasn't awful, but it wasn't great either. So I took an opportunity to use a second seal, send him back down to level 1 Grandmaster, and then started again. And his speed, it's not growing any better, but just the extra levels to keep on plugging away at whatever work I can put on that stat
allows me, it allows you to ensure that any character can be good. So if you feel like using a character, you can, as long as you're putting work into it. And then like the DLC maps, the random skirmishes that'll pop up, all of those things will allow you to make sure that the character you want to use will be good. And you can make them into whatever you want. So you can, when you're upgrading them with a Master Seal, you can take them into a couple of different classes, then you can reset with a second seal and take them into other either lower classes or higher classes, and allows you to compound skills and stats together to make really powerful characters. And that's the thing about Fire Emblem Awakening, is that it does a really great job of tying everything together from previous Fire Emblem games with really great customization and really great character personalities. So like I mentioned before, you have this seals to change your classes, and you can take characters into different classes and level them up to get different skills from these different classes that the classes will learn automatically. And you can keep all those skills within a pool as you use them and pick and choose the ones you want to bring in, because I think you have a cap of 5 skills that you can equip to a certain character. So you can pick and choose the ones you want to make really powerful characters as you take them through these different classes. And there's also much more accessible supports within the game. The support system is a lot easier to interpret. So when characters can support each other and they fight in battle after they've completed an action, if they're next to each other, you'll have the little hearts pop up. You know that those characters can support each other and improve their supports of each other, so you know who to put next to each other in battles. And then, of course, you have the big payoff of maxing out someone's support level, in that you get those unlockable characters. So this game really encourages you to do so much, and it makes like doing all of these things very rewarding. Because it makes your characters super powerful, and it makes fighting through like DLC maps and like all of the end game things really easy, and it's a really great payoff for putting so much work into it. And you know, putting the work itself into it was also really fun, because it's not like you're grinding out on spreadsheets or something. All of these things that you're doing are actually accomplished by fighting battles, and fighting battles are always such really great tactical scenarios that you know, if you're choosing the right units and doing things correctly, that you're going to be able to win battles decisively. And when you do mess up, it's usually because you made a tactical error, or you sent a unit somewhere where they should not have been. And that's the thing about Fire Emblem games that make them so great, is that you have those really high stakes. Once a character dies, they are gone for the rest of the game, unless it's one of your main characters, in which case it's game over. So one of the things they did in Fire Emblem Awakening to try to balance it out for newcomers to the series is they introduced the casual mode, which allows you to switch off those permanent deaths, because, you know, some people are pussies. And it's something that I would really like if they found something between classic mode and casual mode to allow you to save your battles anywhere, because that was something that really appealed to me from casual mode. I didn't want to play casual mode because I wanted a more traditional Fire Emblem experience. And there's got to be a way to kind of strike more of a balance for casual mode, because I don't know if there's a really stiff penalty for losing a character, or if it's just you lose them for the battle and then the next battle you're just able to bring them in again. Maybe if there was some sort of suspension system where they couldn't fight in a couple battles after they had been evacuated from one, or maybe if there was like a monetary cost to re-recruiting them back into your army after they've had a poor battle. I don't know, but something about just getting a character back after they have died in battle doesn't feel like a really authentic Fire Emblem experience. It feels like they're taking a really big element of the game, a part of the game that demands that you be tactically perfect, and puts that to a point where you can just kind of run through a battle, and if somebody dies, no big deal. You just have to do a little bit more work in the next battle if you want to continue to use them. But anyway, it's really one of the great things about Fire Emblem in general is that the game demands that you be good at it with this permanent death system. And not only does it demand it, but then it also provides you the method for being good at it. The game does such a great job of teaching you how to use these characters and how to use your terrain and how to upgrade your characters and what weapons to use versus different weapons. The game is such a fantastic tool for conveying these different tactics to you. And taking away the stakes, it doesn't ruin the experience. I still think you can have a good time with the game, but it just takes away the tension of needing to perform these battles perfectly. But yeah, I cannot more highly recommend Fire Emblem Awakening. I don't know that it's my favorite in the series because the GameCube and the Wii games were also extremely good. But it's definitely one that absolutely needs to be played. This one is holding its price. It is still about $40 on Amazon and also the same on the eShop. And I don't know that this one will be getting a price drop or a sale anytime soon. I mean, maybe around the time that the next one will be coming out, maybe they'll put this one on sale to get some newcomers into the series. But I think this is a game that my first run through, even as a longtime veteran of the series, still took me about 40 hours. So it's a time investment, but it's really suitable for a portable play because it is mission based, and there are a lot of like smaller side missions and skirmishes that you can get into really quickly for just like a really easy pick up and play game. But it's one that you can absolutely sink a lot of time into, and I really think that it is good to sink a lot of time into Fire Emblem Awakening and experiment with it and give yourself time to digest it. And if somebody dies, then reset the battle and start from scratch, because having those negative experiences of having a character die and then resetting the battle just forces you even more to think tactically about what's going on. And maybe that character isn't prepared for that battle. Maybe you're not prepared for that battle. And then your preparations and things you're doing leading up to that battle, maybe fighting another skirmish, becomes part of your tactic for that particular battle. But this game takes a lot of time. There's a lot of bang for your buck. There's DLC maps, which There's one in particular, the Exponential Growth one, is an absolute must download because it's a good way to level up characters who are starting to drag behind. So this one is a definite must buy. It is not an ideal time of year because we just got Majora's Mask, we got Codename Steam coming up. This would be a good summer game if we're looking at another drought. If you haven't played it, this absolutely must play. This is a must-play game. This is the game to play on the 3DS, and I cannot more highly recommend it. But on that note, that is going to bring this show to a close. Next up is going to be the Super Nintendo show. I'm going to make sure that Ryan and Wes are back with me on that one. We have two, maybe three games that we're going to be discussing a bit, and then after the Super Nintendo show, we'll be back with the official show for the month of February, and then start it all back up again in March with the Pokemon show. So, until then, everybody.